I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Last fall, we spoke with three teachers from the Baltimore City Public Schools about their plans, hopes, and aspirations for the coming school year. On this edition of Midday on Education, they're back to talk about how things went this year in their classrooms and to share their take on what's ahead for the system and their students. Enrollment in city schools continues to trend down, but graduation rates are up, and hopes are high as the recommendations of the Kerwin Commission on Education Reform begin to get implemented. Karen Ginyard teaches third grade at the Mount Washington School. Tavon McGee teaches middle school math at City Springs Elementary Middle School. Robert Marinelli heads the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, one of the city's premier citywide high schools. They join me after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Today it's Midday on Education. The academic year drew to a close last Thursday for the Baltimore City Public Schools teachers and 79,000 students. Last Tuesday, we spoke with Dr. Sonia Sonalesis, the CEO of Baltimore City Public Schools. Today on Midday, my guests are three teachers in the school system who teach at the elementary, middle school, and high school levels. They joined us on Midday last August, just before the school year got underway, and we've asked them to come back and tell us how things went this year, to see how the realities in their classrooms compared with their hopes and expectations for the academic year. Karen Ginyard teaches the third grade at Mount Washington School, a public K-8 school. Tavon McGee teaches sixth grade math at City Springs Elementary Middle School on the city's east side. That's one of five conversion charter schools. It's part of the Baltimore Curriculum Project. And Robert Marinelli teaches science and chairs the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute, known for generations as Poly High School in North Baltimore. Poly is a citywide high school and a science math and engineering magnet schools. Good to see you all both, or all back rather, all three of you. So happy summer and welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And folks, we would like to hear from you, particularly if you're a teacher in the Baltimore City Public Schools or any other school system in our listening area. What do you think? What do people need to know? What should folks know about the teaching profession that folks may not know? Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we're streaming everything here in Studio A. So Karen, let's start with you. What was the best thing that happened this year in your classroom or in your school? Maybe individually to you or to the school in general?
The best thing that happened to me was seeing when my students went on a field trip, seeing them make the connections to what we had learned in the classroom throughout the year. So that was surprising, and I was happy to see that they could make those connections.
Surprising.
Yes.
That doesn't always happen.
Yes, because we have a new literacy curriculum, so they were actually really excited to be able to say, oh, this is what we learned, and did you see that? We were in D.C. at the Smithsonian, mm-hmm. so they were able to make those connections from what we learned in the classroom and bring it out into the real world. So I was glad that they embraced.
Yeah, that's great. So which Smithsonian?
We went to different museums. They mm-hmm. they could choose anyone. We just happened to be into the National Gallery of Art, mm-hmm. and they were able to connect the pictures that we looked at before we read the books and look at those pictures and say, hey, remember this? This is the big wave. And I was like, oh, yeah. I was surprised.
Yeah, and the literacy curriculum, is it vastly different than what you'd been teaching in prior years?
Absolutely.
In what
brand
ways?
Brand new for Baltimore City. It's the first time for many years we've complained, literacy teachers have complained about not having everything all in one place. So this touched on the vocabulary, touched on the writing, and touched on the comprehension, but also brought in arts integration. So we analyzed art and then made those connections to the books that we read.
So when you schedule these field trips, mm-hmm. you're scheduling it with an eye and an ear towards what's in this literacy curriculum, right?
Well, when we do plan it, we plan this field trips before we come back, at least on paper. Mm-hmm. But we do try to make some connections to what's in the classroom. We had no idea that this would actually connect to a lot of the things that we studied in the curriculum, because the curriculum was brand new for us as well.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's great. And a little serendipity never hurts. That's a good thing. And Tavon McGee, how about at City Springs Elementary Middle?
Well, for me, the most exciting part was seeing students who
in prior years expressed to me how they didn't like math, gaining excitement for math and learning and applying it to, you know, their everyday lives. We had students who would come to me and express to me how they recognized what was going on in the real world and incorporated in the math that we were learning in the class. So just having a group of students who were excited about doing homework and bringing it in and wanting to turn it into me early in the morning, that was probably the most exciting part. We had opportunities to get the students out of the classroom, and I taught a few classes at the Inner Harbor this year. We just packed up our books. We went to the Inner Harbor and we had class, and the students really enjoyed it.
Now, were you like using stuff in the Inner Harbor as teaching tools?
Absolutely.
Give us an example.
We talk about slopes of hills and slopes of ramps, and you know how this slope would pass inspection with the state, whether or not it was grade at the right grade. So just seeing the students bring those ideas to me was exciting, you know. So we hopefully have some future engineers on our hands,
yeah,
because we incorporated a lot of the math that we did into the science.
Because you got to be able to measure the slope to figure out what it is.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think math teachers may be particularly susceptible to, why do we have to learn this? Mm-hmm. I mean, what do I need to know how to measure an isosceles triangle for in real life, so-called real life?
And it's a question that I love, because most of the time I have the answer, and if I don't have it, we're always going to go back and find the answer, because the math that we do, there are videos out here, you know, there are real life examples that you do every single day that incorporates you right back to math. And when I'm able to give those examples to students and then they go out and seek further knowledge and bring those answers back to me, that's the most exciting part.
Yeah. I had the great honor and blessing of interviewing a guy named John Urschel,
okay,
who is a former Ravens football player. He played at Penn State and then he played for the Ravens. And when he joined the NFL, he also started a PhD in math at MIT. Mm. This guy is brilliant. He is literally a brilliant mathematician. He's already got a theorem named after him and
wow,
stuff. He's incredible. And he's a lineman for a professional football team. You just don't ever, you know, connect those two things. And he talks about the beauty of math. He talks about math as an artistic endeavor, and it's really it's fascinating. And I very much recommend his book. I forget the exact title of it, but it's something like, you know, My Journey in Math and Football. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting thing. So, Bobby Marinelli, we're in the science department at Poly. How about you? What were your big highlights for the year?
Well, it was a tough year. When we got together in August, I had just found out that I had two vacancies in my department. And trying to fill those was difficult, but I think probably the best thing was the faculty rallying around, pitching in additional work. A lot of us were teaching additional classes to cover it. And the students rising to it, where normally, you know, if you've got a substitute in the room for any period of time, there's frustration. And these kids just got to work, mm-hmm, and they got it done.
And how long were the substitutes in?
Well, we fairly quickly filled one spot, but one was until January.
Yeah, so the whole first semester.
We hired a person who then wound up resigning right before spring break.
Wow.
But
so there you were, back where you started from.
Well,
in
we
March.
Were, but yeah, we had brought someone in as a long-term sub who was certified, and she just slid right over into that spot, and they did a great job.
Mm-hmm. And is she going to be hired full-time now?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we're thrilled to have her.
Well, that's quite an audition period if she'd been teaching there for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Literally thrown into it.
Yeah.
But she did a great job. And like I said, it was the students. They make it worth it. Mm-hmm. They find the positive and they work.
Yeah. And Karen, let's go around the horn again and talk about the things that were tough. Teaching is tough. I taught high school for 1 year in 1978. I have never been so exhausted in my life. I mean, I was pretty good at
recovered?
It. Not yet, clearly. But I just think of all the little jobs I've had. I've been a professional musician. I've been doing this and stuff like that. Teaching is far and away the most mentally, physically grueling job I've ever had. And you've been at it for a while. This is not your first time at the rodeo. What were the things that were really rough for you this year?
This year was implementing the new literacy curriculum. It threw a lot of us for a loop. It threw our pacing off in other subjects. And that's not to bash the new curriculum, but I felt like a first-year teacher. Every night I was up studying the lesson. How am I going to implement this for my students? How am I going to make this work for them? How am I going to make it exciting for them and make it real for them so they can make connections? So that was extremely tough for me to just really have to go back to the drawing board and figure out this curriculum and then implement it into my classroom and stay on pace with all of, because I teach all of the subjects. So I had to stay on pace with all of the other subjects as well. So that was extremely tough for me. I started this year with 30 students. So that was a little, I mean, and I know some classrooms have 36 or things like that, but just a lot of people in one room all day is a lot.
Yeah. And so do you have a, you know, assistant teachers or whatever or other people? So it's you, yourself, and you. Yeah. And there's such a difference between teaching something for the first time and the third time and the fifth time, isn't there? I mean, it's just there's no muscle memory when you haven't done it before.
No.
Yeah.
It was tough. We were tired but we made it through.
Yeah.
We made it through.
Yeah. Good for you. And Tavon, how about you? I mean, the stuff that was, you know, that stands out as being a particular challenge.
The most difficult obstacle that we faced as a class, not only as a class, but as a school, was definitely dealing with some of the trauma that the students had to go with. I had, three students in my homeroom class who had their fathers killed from the beginning of the school year to the end of the school year. So being able
three in your homeroom.
And just from my homeroom, all fathers killed here in Baltimore City. So just having to deal with, you know, knowing and researching how to support these kids who are going through these traumatic experiences. The students, you know, they want to do well in school, but they're dealing with so much coming from home, you know. So the most difficult part for this, for me, this school year was definitely dealing with, learning how to deal with the students, because I've seen it happen, but I've never had it happen so close where the students were actually members of my homeroom class. You know, where we're working with the parents. You know, we're trying to partner with the parents. You know, to an even deeper level, so that we can cater to the students' needs in terms of giving them the support they need with, you know, the traumatic experiences that they've had.
And you know, you can have some experience in that. Even, you know, over the years, you can gain, unfortunately, that kind of experience. But boy, every individual circumstance is different, and that, it seems to me, is an example of how important the community of the school is for those children to be able to come to school having had this incredible trauma take place in their lives and have a nurturing, loving community.
The community definitely, the school community in particular, definitely played a large role. One student in particular, his dad was killed and he was in school the next day. You know, because he knew that he had the love and the support, you know, at the school, you know, as well as at home.
So it was a safe, warm place for him to be able to come.
Absolutely. Right. You know, and even, you know, as the school year went on, you know, I developed an even closer relationship with his mother. And she would reach out to me, you know, so I can be that, you know, that male support system in his life.
Yeah. God bless. That's terrific. And of course, Dr. Sonalesis was here just last week, and we were talking about the fact that 12 students in the system were killed by gunfire this past year. There was a memorial service or a ceremony that acknowledged them. The youngest was 7. The oldest was 19. You know, 12 children. And then you talk about the fathers and the ripple effect of that trauma that goes through the system. Just amazing. And Bobby, I mean, Polly, obviously you and your department, you know, started off behind the eight ball anyway.
we had a few challenges.
But as a school and as a school community, I mean, was there anything that stood out as a thing that was particularly difficult to deal with and something you might be able to address in the future? Maybe not.
Other than, I mean, personally, it was that being shorthanded at the beginning of the year. But, you know, like any other jurisdiction, we've got these new programs that they're introducing, the wit and wisdom that Ms. Ginyard spoke of. And, you know, in my context, we now have the MISA test, which is it's a new test from the state measuring science proficiency, and we're figuring it out. So it was a real learning curve for my teachers. They've taken earth science and dipped a little of it into biology, a little into chemistry, a little into physics. So teachers who have been doing that for quite a while were having to readjust and learn new things.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about assessments for both students and teachers. We'll talk about what's new, what's old, what's been kicked out. The park test is going the way of the dodo bird, and we'll talk about all of that with our panel of teachers. Karen Ginyard teaches at the Mount Washington School. Tavon McGee teaches at City Springs Elementary Middle. Bobby Marinelli teaches and leads the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. We'll have more on Baltimore City Schools with our panel when we come back. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, a conversation with Irshad Manji about her latest book, Don't Label Me, An Unusual Conversation for Divided Times. Ms. Manji is the founder of the Moral Courage Project at the University of Southern California. She is gay, she is Muslim, and she has provocative and compelling things to say about diversity and political and cultural polarization. So Irshad Manji joins me tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about life inside the classrooms of three Baltimore City public schools with a panel of teachers who all joined us on the show last August, just before the start of the 2018-19 school year. And we asked them to come back today to talk about their experiences this year. And in a fit of irrationality and poor judgment, they agreed. So here they are. Robert Marinelli is the head of the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. Karen Ginyard teaches at the Mount Washington School. Tavon McGee is on the faculty of City Springs Elementary Middle School. You are welcome to join our conversation. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter @TomHallWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Bobby, let me start with you for this segment. Talk about classroom management. This is something that the teachers talk about a lot, and we hear from people who aren't in the classroom about the challenges that teachers have in classroom management. Of course, anytime there's a bad situation, somebody's got it on videotape, and that's all over YouTube within seconds. But there's, you know, day after day after day in which those occurrences do not happen in your school and in schools across the city. But how, and as an experienced teacher, especially when you hire a new teacher, what advice do you give her or him about this issue of, you know, keeping things under control?
I think the best advice I can give them is they've got to find their authenticity. The students are so, they're so good at sniffing out a fake. You show up in the classroom and you pretend to be something you are not. You try to be a disciplinarian when you are not, in fact, a disciplinarian. They will eat you alive. But I got to say that, you know, when I've got new teachers in my department and they're struggling with this, the first thing I want to do with them is debrief and find out, like, what can we find out about this child? There's something going on. It really has nothing to do with the content of the course. It probably is not a personality conflict with you. They're bringing some baggage to the school. There's something that happened. My God, you know, you've got three young men who've lost their fathers in a school year and everything else that goes on in Baltimore City. And when we've had situations where there has been a problem, I don't want to label that child based on that one occurrence. I don't know what drove them to that. Sometimes they're stuck in almost a fight or flight. They're lashing out. They don't know how to handle it. So that is probably the hardest thing for newer teachers in my experience to kind of come around to, is they want to just fix it right now. They want to just do something different the next time. And it usually takes a little bit of investigation.
Yeah. And Karen, you're giving an amen to Mr. Marinelli there. I mean, and as an experienced teacher, you've been teaching how many years now?
I just finished my 11th year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, it doesn't work to say, oh, I've seen this before. Mm-hmm. You know, when a kid acts out in 2018, oh, I saw this in 2014. Mm-hmm. Every kid is different.
Mm-hmm. They are different. And I often tell, sometimes we have interns in the classroom, and I tell them, it doesn't matter how great your lesson is. If you can't control the classroom, you're not going to get to teach that lesson. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to manage the students at all times. And I often tell my students, I'm a mother first. So you all are like my children, and I have the same expectations for you that I have for my own children. Mm-hmm. And they begin, oh, really? Like, yeah. So they understand that, but also just being consistent with what you do. And as Bobby said, just being authentic, because I don't care how small they are or how tall they are, they can sniff you out. They know when you are not prepared. They know when you're not being real with them. They know. So mm-hmm. you have to be authentic with them and be able to build that relationship.
Absolutely.
An authentic relationship with the students.
Yeah, and Tavon McGee, fake it till you make it doesn't work in a classroom.
Absolutely not. She just touched on one of the biggest pieces for me. Of course, I support being authentic, but that relationship piece, it really drives everything home when you know what the students are dealing with. You know, you might have to deal with 90 kids in a day. You never know. But when you take the time out, you know, sometimes it's just giving them a compliment, you know, or asking them one question, or asking them, you know, how can you help? When you build that relationship, it's like the foundation for having solid classroom management. And I went to a showing of my Baltimore. It's a showing that's happening in Baltimore City Schools, with a few schools where they interview kids and they talk about some of the traumatic experiences that they have, you know, dealing with, you know, fatherlessness and trauma and abuse. And if you don't know these kids, if you don't take the time out to really get to know them, you never know what you have sitting in your classroom. You always have those diamonds in the rough where you can just reach out to them just a little bit, you know, and it could shine a brand new light on them that could give them that drive to, you know, and sometimes if they don't want to do it for themselves, they'll do it for you. You know, because you took the time out to build those relationships. And you can only build that relationship, you know, if you're being authentic. You know,
yeah. And how many times have we heard that story, you know, about the teacher that inspired me, the mm-hmm. teacher that got me? I mean, John Urschel, as a matter of fact, Aunt Google called after I mentioned his book. The name of the book is called Mind and Matter, A Life in Math and Football. And John Urschel, a young black kid growing up in a single parent home, his parents were divorced. He was still very much in touch with his father, but he grew up with his mom. And there was a teacher, you know, who said, okay, you like math? Well, then try this problem. Try mm-hmm. read this book, you know, do this, and kept, you know, nudging him along. And he talks about that. So it's so important. And of course, Tavon, you are that rare breed of an African-American man who has chosen teaching as a profession. I mean, mm-hmm. Bobby talks about the difficulty of hiring, you know, just in general. There's teacher shortages all across the United States. And mm-hmm. the school system, Dr. Sonalesis, has talked very specifically and passionately about the need to attract more black men to the teaching profession. So that relationship that you have, perhaps particularly with your male students, mm-hmm. Is extra important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What can we do as a system to get more guys like you in the game?
I'm paying careful attention here.
And it's a question that I need to dig deeper into and try to find some answers, because I'm asked this question often.
Sure.
You know, and I really don't have a solid answer. You know, a lot of people, they go to college with the mentality of getting a degree and making a whole bunch of money, you know, and especially in the African American community, having a degree is not the icebreaker for making a whole bunch of money, you know. And if the money was different, maybe, you know, maybe guys would come into it. But I think that needs to be a real push, you know, going into some of the local colleges and promoting, you know, the Baltimore City school system, so that we can get some African-American males. Because just, you know, our presence in the classroom with our African-American students.
Hugely important.
Hugely important. I experienced something this year. I won't be too long, but I teach 6th grade African-American students, and I have two women partners who are both African-American. And sometimes, you know, we have to go a little bit farther to get the kids in line. And I've had African American speakers come into my class, and I've also had white speakers come in as well. And it was for me disheartening seeing that my students will automatically, you know, act a certain way mm-hmm. when they get people in front of them, you know, that are not, you know, of their race ethnicity. So, man, I wish I had the answer
yeah,
for you.
No, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. Because, I mean, I, Dr. Sonalesis and every other person, you know, Bobby and people who are doing hiring throughout the system have the same issue. I mean, Bobby Marinelli, when you make the pitch to somebody to come work for the Baltimore City Public School System, how do you make that pitch? Is it a good place to work?
Well, I don't really make the pitch. It's not like that I'm out there recruiting. They're coming to us. I mean, I have to wait to see who's been cleared by the
because they are recruited district. by North Avenue.
So
yeah.
I can't interview people prior to their being hired there. But I, as a quick story, I was at Morgan State earlier this year at a STEM conference, and they had a very sobering statistic. And right now, it's very difficult to find physics teachers in the University of Maryland system. So we're talking about all the schools, College Park, UMBC, Frostburg, Salisbury. The University of Maryland system on average graduates 2 physics education majors per year. Mm. And every school is going to have to teach physics. And there are a lot of schools that for a while there did away with physics.
2 in the entire system every year.
They average 2 in the system in physics education. Now we have the alternative certification programs. There's Baltimore City Teacher Residency. There's Teach for America. There's another one I think called Urban Teachers. So a lot of them are career changers. They could have a physics degree, some type of earth science experience. And we can, you know, I do tell them, I recognize that I'm in a special place. So I don't make any pretenses mm-hmm. that I'm very, very lucky to be where I am and teach with whom I teach and teach the students I teach. But, you know, if all you know about Baltimore City schools is what you read in the Baltimore Sun mm-hmm. or you see on Project Baltimore, you're going to run fast away. And I tell them it's not like that. It doesn't have to be like that. And I want to be part of it not being that.
Yeah. 2 physics education majors in the entire system. In 1978, I was a conducting fellow at the Aspen Music Festival. And a friend of mine told me, who's from Indiana University, he said that year they graduated 34 harp majors from the music school of Indiana University. 34 harp majors, and we got 2 physics teachers? Now, you don't want those harp players teaching you physics. Let me tell you, those people are nuts.
Although acoustics.
But I mean, Karen, when people come to you and say, you know, I'm teaching in Anne Arundel County, or I'm teaching in Howard County, but I live in Baltimore, I'd like to teach in the city schools, or someone from out of town says, you know, I'm thinking about taking a job at the Baltimore City Schools, is it a good place to work? I mean, is the answer to that question just completely grounded in your school, you know, right now? Or but as a system, is it an attractive job for people who are good teachers?
You have to want to teach, number one. You just, you know, this is not, I want to just go work here. You have to want to teach, and you have to think about why you want to teach. Yes, it's going to be different in districts. It's going to be different in schools. But you're still in the classroom with students. And again, if you're building that relationship with students and you really want to teach, I feel like you can teach anywhere. I really do. It may be challenging, more challenging in other places. But overall, Mount Washington wasn't my first school. You know, I've switched schools and I still love the students and I still taught regardless of what was going on outside of my classroom, because there are other things that teachers do have to deal with outside of the students that I tell my students, you know, sometimes I come in here in a bad mood too, but you know what? I leave it right outside that door and I come in here to teach. So there are other things that go on that you're going to have to deal with, just like any job.
Sure.
Any job. You're going to have to deal with administration. You're going to have to deal with your supervisor. Paperwork. All complaints from different people. You're going to have to deal with all of that. So you have to be willing. What are you willing to put up with? What are you willing to deal with? And one thing I also say, people say, oh, you get your summers off. No, we don't. So we do. There's something for me as a mother.
I mean, you're teaching summer school.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But for me as a mother, yes, when there's a snow day, my kids are home with me. So that is great for me. So that type of thing. But you just have to be willing to take the good with the bad.
Karen Ginyard, Tavon McGee, and Bobby Marinelli are here. They teach at the elementary, middle, and high school level here in the city of Baltimore. We're talking about teaching, and we're talking about education here in Baltimore City Schools. Our number at midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. You can follow me on Twitter, @TomHallWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. We do have a phone call from David in Pikesville. David, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
I'd like to address my question to, I think it's Bobby from Poly. How do you keep your curriculum up to date and relevant with the computers and hand calculators that are so much in use today? And how do you handle obsolete subjects such as how to use the slide rule and logarithms?
Well, I mean, you're talking about calculators and computers, and they're simply tools, just like a slide rule is a tool. And with current technology, more is available to us. That's what the students are going to be using while they're in college. It's certainly what they're going to be using out in industry and in their career. It would be a disservice to not get them as current with technology as we possibly can.
And Tavon McGee is a math teacher. If I'm a sixth grader and I come to you, Mr. McGee, why do I need to learn how to do long division? Because I got my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you want to tell me, you want to know what 49 divided by 7 is? I can tell you in 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
How do you answer that?
Well, for instance, I'm going to give you a real life example. I had a kid come to me and said, Coach McGee, they call me Coach. Why do we learn?
Because you do coach stuff in addition to teaching.
Why do we learn distance and rate and time? So I showed them a video of Amazon with their new invention that they'll be introducing soon, where they're delivering packages that you order online from Amazon. They're delivering them with drones, And I asked them, when you order something, do you want it to come to you at a fast rate? And the answer is usually yes. So the goal with Amazon is they want to deliver your package to you the same day, So now we need to figure out how long is it going to take this drone to travel from one place to the next place at this time, starting at this time, ending at this time, and going at this speed. So when they see the real life example, they say, oh, well, now I want to create a drone and I want to learn more about distance and time.
Yeah. You just bring it back to life. Yeah, very good. Well, our director and engineer, Luke Spicknall, talks a lot about drones. He's usually half of it talking about me.
Okay.
So, man, that's a different kind of drone. It's a different kind of drone. But it is something he's very interested in. There was an election in the Baltimore Teachers Union. Are you guys all members of the union?
Yes.
So, and it's, as far as I know, the latest is that it's still being contested. A middle school teacher, English teacher named Diamante Brown, beat Marietta English. The vote was 901 to 839, and now it's being reviewed by the American Federation of Teachers. Can anybody give me an update on what's going on with that and what were the conversations in your schools, in your faculty rooms around this issue of the school systems or the school unions situation? Anybody want to take that one? Or do you want to just all crawl under the table and go into the fetal position?
I guess talking to some of the teachers, it was time for a fresh start in the leadership. The leadership had been in place for roughly 20 some years, and many teachers felt that it was time for somebody new, somebody younger, to take the reins.
And do you have expectations, Karen, for a real new direction for the union, for the community of teachers in the system?
Just to continue to stay in touch with what's going on in the classrooms with the teachers and making sure that we are everything is equitable as far as we are concerned, especially when they have those relationships with the central office. So just making sure that continues to happen. Right now we're under contract negotiations. So mm-hmm. That is something that I'm looking at very closely to see, how that's going to go.
And Tavon McGee, and people pointed to the difficulty of even voting in this election. Mm-hmm. The hours you could vote were very limited. You either had to get in before school or after school. It was difficult. I mean, it seems some people would paint this as a very acrimonious, very dispiriting situation. Do you see it personally that way? And again, I know you're just speaking personally, not on behalf of all teachers or anything.
Well, in terms of making the change, like she just mentioned, as long as equity involved, and long as the change that's happening is needed, that's all I'm for, you know. And that's at any level when voting is involved. As long as the goal is to be equitable, and the goal is to create positive change, then my support is there.
And as the union has communicated with you, we're going to take a break, but before we do, in terms of the negotiations, Ms. Brown is representing the union right now, right, as the winner of the election, even though that election apparently is going to be sort of reviewed, right? Mm-hmm. But she is moving forward as the president of the BTU.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Tavon McGee is on the faculty of City Springs Elementary Middle School. Bobby Marinelli is the chair of the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. Karen Ginyard teaches at the Mount Washington School. Our conversation with our panel of Baltimore City Public School teachers continues after a quick break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. If you want to follow me on Twitter, and let's face it, dozens of people do, @TomHall, WYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. This year, the student population in Baltimore City Public Schools was below 80,000 students for the first time in more than 10 years. The system reports a total enrollment of 79,297 students this year. That's down from nearly 85,000 students in 2015. The city's population declined by about 20,000 residents during that same time period. If you've just joined us, it's Midday on Education. My guests are three Baltimore City Public School teachers who also joined us last August, just before the start of the school year. We threatened to have them back, and here we are making good on that threat to talk about their experiences in their respective schools and their expectations for the year coming up. Tavon McGee is a sixth grade math teacher at City Springs Elementary Middle School. Bobby Marinelli is the head of the science department at Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. And Karen Ginyard is a third grade teacher at the Mount Washington School. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. You can also ping us on the WYPR Facebook page. Let's talk about the student enrollment for a second. And that one of the things that interested me is that this year the system reports 41,500 students in pre-K to grade 5 and 20,600 students in high school. So is it fair to make the assumption that kids are starting in the system and they're not finishing in the system? Mm-hmm. And if so, why is that? I mean, obviously there's a certain churn of families who come in and out of town. But is that a reflection of the city and where we are as a city and a community? Is that a reflection of the school? So what do you all make? Tavon McGee, what do you make of that?
Well, for starters, I would like to see the numbers on the dropout rate for high school students.
Which are lower. The graduation rates are up and the dropout rate is lower.
Right. But I would say that a lot of it is happening because the older kids get, parents want to just move them to a safer place. You know, so, you know, they want to move their kids out of the city and send them to schools and, you know, some of the surrounding school districts. I would say that plays a pretty decent role.
And Karen, it's a catch-22, isn't it? Because mm-hmm. you attract people to the city because the school system is good, mm-hmm. and then you lose people because the school system is a concern.
I don't blame the school system in this case. I talk about this a lot, and I've talked to some of our elected officials. A lot of it has to do with the crime and the property taxes. Mm-hmm. My property taxes are like a tuition payment. And that plays a lot to me and folks. You know, I would love to send my child to my neighborhood school, but I can barely afford to live here. And is it safe? And so I think once they start to tackle those two things, you may have families who want to stay in the city. But a lot of people do leave. Okay, that's great for elementary school, but we're out of here now. it's getting too bad, or it's just, it's not affordable.
Yeah, and you and I live a block away from each mm-hmm. other, and we've seen families come, and then they have kids, and then all of a sudden mm-hmm. the kid's 4 or 5 years old, and mm-hmm. they're not there anymore.
That's you right.
know, we have seen that happen, because mm-hmm. we've both been there a long time. And Bobby Marinelli, a school like Poly is one of the most desirable high schools in the system. I mean, it's a very competitive citywide school, so you apply to get into Poly, right?
Yes.
What's the application rate been for Poly? I mean, I assume it's stayed as competitive as it's been now for some time.
Oh, it certainly has. One of the things I've been doing in recent years is I was a recruitment coordinator. So I'd go out to all the middle schools, do the high school fairs, articulation visits, talking tours, things like that. I visited 57 visits last fall, which was amazing. More and more schools are asking us to come down and recruit. We admit typically 425 freshmen, and we're hovering around 1,500 to 1,800 applications that we know of. Now, they don't apply to us. They apply through the school choice program. It goes downtown, and then we just get the gaining list, as we call it. The students at the central office have determined our best fit for Poly.
And how many do you get then to choose your 400 kids? How many do you get?
Oh, they tell us which
425. Oh, they tell you. So you're not choosing the students. Downtown
is
choosing.
We do not. They've got their whole composite score thing figured out. They send us a list of 425 students who have been admitted. There's an additional 50 on the wait list. And then if parents choose to let us know that they've made another choice, maybe they're going to a private school, maybe they've left the district, we can dip into the waiting list and try and get, because we're budgeting. We're staffing based on expecting 425 students. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult sometimes when we just don't know. You know,
because people make last-minute decisions and all of a sudden, you know, they're not
coming. We have a diagnostic test that we give in the spring just to make sure we want to see where the kids are in terms of algebra and if they want to test into a second level of language. I also run a program in the first week of August for the incoming freshmen called High School Prep. We still have anywhere from 60 to 80 students we don't see for the place a diagnostic test, or we don't see for high school prep, and we open the school year not quite sure if they're coming.
Wow. All sorts of questions.
Yeah. But it usually does work out. We're able to dip into the wait list if need be, and we usually hover around 400, 425 freshmen.
Let's go to line two and James in Baltimore. James, welcome to Midday.
Good evening, Tom. How you doing?
Doing great.
I'm a special education advocate, and I've been advocating for over 20 years. And one of the questions I have is, who makes sure that the modalities of learning are taught by teachers in the classroom? Because there's a variety of modalities that children learn best with. And if a child's struggling, a lot of times it's because the modality that the teacher is most comfortable with is not the modality that the child learns best in. So who makes sure that occurs correctly in the classroom setting?
Well, thanks for that question, James. I mean, he's talking about visual, tactile, auditory. I mean, as an elementary school teacher, Karen, I mean, if you got 30 kids, you could have 30 different preferred modalities.
Well, one of the things when they first come in, especially that first month, is about getting to know your students, how they learn, how do they like to learn. So you have different types of things, tests that you can give them, or just papers that they can fill, interest inventories, things like that, that you can begin to learn of how your students learn. So it's about getting to know your students. And then with the caller being a special education, if the student has an individualized education plan, somewhere in there, you should also understand what the children need, what the child, learn the child and how they like to learn and things like that. So really, it's just about getting to know your students and then implementing that in the classroom. No one is there to make sure that you do that, but as a good teacher, that's just something you do to get to know your students.
You shift and make it work for each kid.
Yes. Mm-hmm. If you see if it's not working this way, let's try it, you know, this way. And most of the time, teachers will do that. The way they present the information will hit all of those different styles of learning.
And Tavon McGee, the PARC test has been in place now for a few years. It's been widely criticized. It's no longer going to be used after this school year. They're going to mm-hmm. change it. They're going to go back to what they call the MCAPS, the Maryland Comprehensive Assessment Program. Your kids take the PARC tests?
We do.
Mm-hmm. So you're teaching 6th, 7th, and 8th grade at your school. Tell me about the day of those tests. What's the vibe at the school like on the day that the kids are taking those tests? And do you all as faculty fret about it? Do the kids fret about it? What actually goes on the day that those tests are being administered?
High levels of anxiety from both students and teachers. I try to teach my students to remain calm and, you know, and not place their lives on, you know, on this test. You know, this test is just, you know, it's an assessment to see whether or not you've met the standards that are placed upon you, you know, by the testing, you know, people who created the test. And going into the test, I can say that my students, they looked at the test like it was just another day, you know, and mm-hmm. I tell them not to worry about excelling on a test. Just do the best you can do, because that's really all you have to give, the best that you have. And, you know, I expressed to my students, you know, what I saw throughout my building with teachers, you know, being on edge about this test, you know, and wanting to make sure their students do well. And that same energy.
But that's because it's a reflection on the efficacy of their teaching. That's you know, your fate lies in the hand of a third grader or a sixth grader. That's tough.
Yes, but I think your performance, the way you perform on that test, can also be dependent upon how calm you're able to remain, you know, during that stressful situation. So that's one of the things I try to drive home with my students, because I understand that the energy that I have is going to be translated directly to them. So the more calm I remain as a teacher and teach them that, you know, this is just a test and I'm going to do the best I can because I'm prepared for it, you know, that's what I try to drive home all day long.
We have a comment from Ree on Facebook who says, we have to teach STEM, STEAM, and computer science. We can't use an old system with a new system in place. I'm not exactly sure what that means, Bobby, but what's your reaction?
We are asked to do a lot there. You know, this testing regimen, we went through this, and basically at Poly, all the computer labs get shut down the first week of March, and then they're dedicated entirely to testing. So teachers are scrambling to get all computer work done prior to that. We had an ELA 10, ELA 11, Park Algebra 1. We've got the MISA. We're testing these kids to death. And this is not something that I point the finger at the district. This is from much higher. This is the state and the federal government. And I use the analogy, and we were talking about this before this session. I use the analogy that you've got a child home sick, and you know they're sick, and you know the best thing for your child is to rest. You would like them to sleep. Instead, you wake them up every half hour to take their temperature just to prove to yourself that they are, in fact, still sick. We're interrupting instruction. The year my son was a junior in high school, he had 36 hours of standardized testing from March 1st to the end of the school year, and not one bit of that had anything to do with a classroom grade for the third or fourth quarter. So the little bit of instruction he did get when he wasn't testing, they still had to give him quizzes and tests, and they still had to do assessments that way. We're shutting down education in mid-spring mm-hmm. so that we can do this diagnostic thing. And it's making some people an enormous amount of money.
Mm-hmm. It is frustrating. We got a call when Dr. Sonalisis was here the other day from a teacher who said, who voiced an objection to unannounced observations of teachers. Mm-hmm. So you all are being assessed as well as the students. What is the best way to assess the teachers, Karen? And I'm going to give you the last word because we're about to run out of time here.
The best way, well, I would prefer, this is just me, principals doing informal observations. So coming in, that's how you support a teacher and that's how a teacher grows. If you want to come in unannounced in my classroom, that's fine. And you call it a formal observation. Then we have what's called our instructional framework, which has 9 teach actions, which I don't think every lesson applies to every teach action. You're not going to get into that lesson.
Yeah.
So I think it puts us
so
on
doing it on a looser basis would be more helpful for both you and your boss.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all very much. We have a comment from Linda, and it's echoed by many people on Facebook. Thank you very much for all that you do for our kids and for our future. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's truly my pleasure.
All right. Karen Ginyard, she's a third grade teacher at Mount Washington School. Tavon McGee teaches sixth grade at City Springs Elementary Middle. And Bobby Marinelli heads the science department at Poly. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, my guest for the hour will be Irshad Manji. We're going to talk about her latest book, Don't Label Me, an incredible conversation for divided times. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared has recently been recognized by the Daily Meal. You can find menu and hours at Joe Squared. NPRnews.com. Stay tuned for Here and Now. That's coming up after the NPR newscast at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.